We're holding on Kuf Samach Beis, Amud Beis, the last line. We learned yesterday that you can't have two blank lines between the end of the shtar and the signatures of the Edim because we said you don't learn from what it said. If you have something written in the last line of the shtar, you don't learn anything extra from that as far as any extra Tnoyim or anything like that that would change the meaning of the shtar. And therefore, we said if you have two blank lines over there, then that would leave room to put in an extra line over there at the end. And then the line before it would be then not the last line of the shtar. And then you would end up using that to modify the terms of the shtar where you're not supposed to. So to begin with, you shouldn't have. Now, we said you can't expect the Edim to sign directly below the text of the shtar because they're not such experts at handwriting that they might not be afraid they're going to overwrite it or something. But we can only have one line of blanks. We can only have one blank line between the text of the shtar and the edim, and we discussed that maybe 1.5 lines would be okay as well. So now let's get back to that matter of the 2 lines. So iboilahu shnei shittin sha'amru. When we said if there's two blank lines between the body of the shtar and the edim, and we also talked about at the end yesterday that if there is more space than that, then one thing you could do is you could have other edim fill up the space. And even if those edim are posel, we're not going to worry about it, as we discussed yesterday, the comparison with space versus posel, with space in a sukkah versus posel a schach. In any case, basically, though, you're not supposed to have 2 lines. The question is, what do we mean by 2 lines? Now, you think about it. You think of in Lashon Kodesh, you have letters that fit within the line and don't go up or down. Most of the letters of the Aleph Beis are that way. And then you have, for example, you have a Lamed which goes above the line. You have a Langa Chof, and then some of the other Langa letters that go below the line. In other languages, you have similar in English, Lahavdil. You have letters that extend above the basic height of the letter, and letters that extend below it. So when we say 2 lines, what do we mean in terms of that? So shnei shittin sha'amru, the 2 lines that we're talking about, hein va'aviron, do we mean the 2 blank lines as well as the spaces below, as well as the spaces below or above or between them? Or maybe it means even when there's only room for 2 lines without any space between them. In other words, given that in Lashon Kodesh you only have a few letters, you have a lamed going above the line, and you only have a couple of end letters that go below the line, then conceivably, maybe if you have, you could argue that if you don't have that, even if you don't have any space, conceivably there might be quite a bit you could write over there without any space above or below it. But Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok Mistabra Hein Va'aviron, it's more logical to say that it does mean that there has to be, if we're talking about 2 lines at least, that there has to be, that it means also the space between them. Meaning, in other words, there has to be some amount of space. When we say 2 lines, there has to be some amount of space between where you could write 2 lines of text. There has to be some room in there for there to be the ascending part of a lamed or the descending part of a langachof. Because Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, if you were going to say that you have lines without the space between them, and even that would be enough to passel it, then you'd have to ask shtita achas b'loy avira l'may chazya. Then after all, what would you be able to accomplish with 1 line without any room for ascenders or descenders like that? Now, what does that mean? So the Rashbam actually takes out the Rashbam does not have the words shita achas b'lo yavira. The Rashbam's girsa is just isak da chayin v'lo yavira l'may chazya. Then what good would it do? Meaning, in other words, the Rashbam understands that the question is we're not talking about 1 line. The fact is we're saying if there's 2 lines of space. Now, if you were to try to use that space to fill in something and then to claim, here we have extra details of the shtar and therefore they should modify what it says, then the only way to do that would be, the fact is you do have to have some space between one line and the next, because even if you don't have lameds and langachofs to deal with, the fact is you can't have the 2 lines directly one on top of the other. You need a bit of space between the text on 1 line and the text on the other. So the result is you'd have to write the letters extra small. And then it would be noticeable that, wait a second, why is the writing at the end of the shtar over here crowded compared to the rest of the shtar? And if you write larger, and if you write larger letters than normal, then for sure you'd be able to tell, because then you don't have, if you write rather not larger, but if you write normal sized letters, then you're also going to be able to tell something's wrong, because why? So either, in other words, one way or the other, Rav Nachman Yitzchok is saying, if you don't have, if you were to say, so let's say, in other words, the height of a, let's say the kimloy shita, let's say what we'd be talking about over here, the size of the vertical height of a line, let's say in the size lettering that's used in this particular shtar, the height of each line is, let's say, half an inch. So if you're going to tell me two lines would be exactly an inch with no space between them, then what would it be? Either in order to be able to write two lines over there, you'd have to write the letters smaller than normal, or if you write them normal size, then it would be noticeable because they're crowded together, one line with the next. Either way, it would be very noticeable that there's something wrong with that part of the shtar. Therefore, Rav Nachman Yitzchok says it's more logical to say that what we mean is you have a half inch each, let's say, for each of the two lines, plus a little space between them, the amount of space that you'd have between the other lines of the shtar. That's how the Rashbam's Girsa is, and that's how he explains the Gemara. Tosfos has the Girsa, as we have in front of us in the Gemara, Shita Achas B'lay Avir L'may Chazya, and the question would be, what would you be able to do in one line over there? Because again, the idea is that if you're going to try to squeeze in two lines of text into that space, then again, it would be very noticeable because it would be much smaller script than normal. Plus, also, as the Gemara is going to point out soon, most people are not so adept at writing such small letters in the first place. And then Tosfos actually gives another explanation, that the question would be that even if you had one blank line over there without any avir, without any space above or below it, you really wouldn't be able to write anything in it anyway. And therefore, the question would be, why did we have to say before that if the Edim have one blank line above their signatures, between the end of the shtar and their signatures, that it's kosher? The question would be, according to that, what's the chiddush? Of course, there's nothing you could write in that space anyway. Anyway, so Rav Nachman Yitzchok is saying, El Shmamina Hein Va'aviron. So obviously, therefore, it means when we talk about the two lines, what we mean is there does have to be a certain amount of space between them, like you have between the lines of the other, like you have between the other the lines elsewhere in the shtar, and that way conceivably. So now, if you have two blank lines like that, then you have a problem, because now conceivably he could write something in that one or two extra lines and write something that modifies the terms of the shtar or something like that. So Ella Shmamina Hein Va'aviron. So the Gemara says, yeah, Shmamina, yes, we can prove from that's what it means. In other words, so in our scenario, you would have to have for the shtar to be possible, it would mean that you would have between the end of the shtar and the signatures of the Edim, you would have a bit more than an inch, a half inch each for two lines, plus some space between them that would conceivably be that if something were to be written in there, that there would be room to write it, and it would look much like the rest of the shtar. So now the Gemara brings. More discussion about these two lines. Now we're not necessarily now the various opinions that we're going to bring now are not necessarily disagreeing with what we just said, that you need space between them, but they're saying, on the contrary, they're saying that you might actually. That you might actually need even more space than that for it to be a problem. So Rav Shabsi, Amar Mishmei Chizkiya, Shnei Shittin She'amru, B'Ksav Yedei Edim, V'lo K'Ksav Yedei Sofer. So one point, first of all, Rav Shabsi makes, says in the name of Chizkiya, when we talk about these two lines, and as we just said, there has to be space between them as well for it to be a problem, we're not talking about, how do we measure the size of the lines? Different people write in different sizes. You would have to go according to the size of lettering that the Edim use, not the size of lettering that the Sofer used. It would have to be the size of, we'd go according to the size of lettering that the Edim used, rather than the size of lettering that the Sofer did. My timer. Now, why is that? Rav Shabsi says, to call them a Zayif, Because if a person does want to forge something, if he wants to add something to the shtar, who is he going to have do that? Is he? He's not going to go to Lav Lagabi Safra Ozel Bazayef. He's not going to go to the sofer to ask him to add. He's saying, you wrote the shtar already, so now please add something else in your handwriting, and therefore it'll look like it was part of the original shtar. The sofer, first of all, the sofer is not going to want to listen to him. The sofer is not going to want to ruin his professional reputation. If anybody ever finds out that he did that, then nobody's going to come to him to write shtaris anymore if they know that he's willing to forge and to alter shtaris like that. So therefore, if the guy does want to forge something, if the guy does want to add something to the shtar, what he's going to do is he's going to try to do it himself. An expert sofer knows how to write smaller letters. You think about it, think of like the distinction, for example, like kids who don't really know how to write yet, they generally write in larger letters. And then as you get older, you usually learn, you learn how to control the pen better, and therefore you write smaller. So here, in a similar vein, the sofer he writes for a living. Therefore, he's very adept at using the pen to write small letters. A regular person who does not, like the Edim, for example, the Edim don't write for a living, so therefore they would tend to write larger letters than the sofer did. So in the same way, the person himself who wants something added to the shtar, he would try to add it in his own handwriting. And the result would be, it would end up a little larger than the letters would end up a little larger than the sofer did. So when we figure out what do we mean if the shtar is possible, if we have two blank lines of space, we have to calculate the size of those lines in terms of the Adim's handwriting, not in terms of the sofer's handwriting. Because a regular person, in other words, if there was just enough room for two lines plus the space between them, as we said, that the sofer might write, a regular person wouldn't be able to fit two lines in there without crowding the letters or leaving less space between them or whatever, where then it would be very noticeable, and therefore we're not worried unless we have that amount of space. So, with that said, Rabbeinu Yonah points out that if we do find, it is true, generally, we're not going to assume that a sofer did it. Nevertheless, if we find something else strange about the shtar, for example, the last line being right on top of the signatures of the Edim, and as we learned yesterday, generally, you're going to have one line of blank space between them, then even if it's in the handwriting of the sofer, then we better investigate the shtar more thoroughly, because maybe the guy did get the sofer to agree to add an extra line. Well, once we establish that, so how much when we say you have two lines with space between them, and we're saying you go according to the size of the handwriting of a regular person, not of the sofer, so how much, what do we mean in terms of the spaces, do we also have to consider? Again, here's where we get back to, you don't just have spacing between the lines, for the fact that you can't have the letters right one on top of the other, you have to have a little space between them, but now is where we start considering the space for the ascenders of Lamed, or the descenders of Langachov, and things like that. So the Rashbam learns that the following opinions are not arguing with Reb Shabsi in the name of Chizkiah. Chizkiah had said that you have to consider the size of lettering that an average person is going to do, not the size of lettering that the sofer is going to do. And then within that, we're arguing how much space does there have to be between the two lines for it to be a problem. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn. Rabbi Gershom and the Ritva explains that no, you do have to you do have to consider the possibility that maybe after all the sofer was convinced to add these extra lines, but on the other hand, how much space do you have? So in that case, we're going according to the size of lines of smaller handwriting, the kind that the sofer can do, but then we still have to take into consideration the space that there might be needed for lamads and chafs. So, Amr of Yitzchok Bar Elazar, for example,
For example, if you have two lines and there's enough space in to write on one line the word lacha, and on the other one, and then the next line also the word lacha without the top of the lamed touching the bottom of the langachof. So that means, in other words, you have quite a bit of space. So you have quite a bit of space between the two lines. In case it comes out that on one line you have a langachof and then the next line right below it you would have a lamed, then you need, in order for there to be a problem, there would need to be enough space to write like that. Alma kasava, meaning that Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar holds shnei shittin va'arba avirin. The two lines that we're talking about altogether, it would include four. Altogether, it would include four spaces. Meaning, in other words, according to him, you would have the size of the actual text itself. Nowadays, when it comes to printing and nowadays computer type setting and whatever, they have a term in English they call the X height of a letter. Meaning, when you think of the letter X in English, it doesn't go above or below the line. So that means the size, the amount of space that the basic letter would take up, and then you have the space for ascenders and descenders. So, in other words, Rabbi Yitzchak is saying that you have to get, when we talk about the two lines over here, really what we mean is, in other words, you have the two X heights, the size of the space where you could write, for example, an Aleph or a Beis or most of the other letters that don't go above or below the line. Plus, you need above the top line. And above the top line and below it, and above the top and above the bottom line and below it, there needs to be enough room for ascenders and descenders. And only then would the shtar be possible if you have two full blank lines like that, with all those spaces. So again, in other words, the point would be if let's say the X height in this particular script is half an inch, and let's say the space that you need for the top of a lamed in such a script would be let's say another half inch, then Rabbi Yitzchak is telling us that you would need, in order for the shtar to be possible, you would need altogether six spaces of half an inch altogether, in other words, 3 inches altogether, in order for there to be a problem. And the idea being, in other words, that the idea being, in other words, that a person would only, if you had that amount of space, then the person would feel comfortable going and adding something to the shtar, realizing that he's not going to have a problem, even if there ends up in one particular place a langachof sticking down, and on the next line below it a lamed sticking up, and then below it you'd have the signatures of the edim. He wouldn't be afraid to do it because he knows that he has enough room. But if it was any less space than that, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar is saying, then he wouldn't dare to try to forge it in the first place because he can't. It's hard for him to think ahead of exactly what and plan ahead. He's not an expert sofer, after all, to think exactly what he's going to write in that space. And he might end up with something bumping into one another, and he's going to be afraid to try that in the first place. So that's what Yitzchak ben Elazar says, that would be only if you have that minimum amount of space. So again, two X heights, as they call them. So the amount of space where you could write two full lines, let's say of Alephs or Beises or most letters of the Aleph Beis, plus above each one and below each one, the space for any Lamids or any Langachofs that might be on that line. Only then do you have a problem with that amount of blanks, with two lines, including all those blank spaces between the body of the Shtar and the Edim, but not less than that. So again, the Rashbam is learning that he's not arguing with Reb Shabsay in the name of Chizkiah. He's saying both. You do need to. All of that is, we first figure the X height in terms of the ksav yad of the edim, not of the sofer, who's more expert at writing. And then on top of that, we need to multiply that by the amount of space for two full lines plus the spaces above and below. That's one opinion. Reb Chiya Ba'ami Mishmei De Ulam Kugen Lamed Milamayla V'Chof Milamata. Reb Chiya Ba'ami says, in the name of Ullah, it doesn't have to be quite as much as that. It could be where you have, there's room enough to write a Lamed in the top line and a Langachof on the bottom line. Meaning, Alma Kasavar Shnei Shittin U'Shloisha Avirin. Meaning that Reb Chiya Ba'ami is saying, even if you only have enough space for two lines of regular text, two X heights, plus three spaces, then that would be enough. Because in other words, it's easy enough. It's easy enough that you might have, yes, you might have on the top line, for example, a line gachof is sticking down, and then below it on the bottom line, you're going to have a lamed. So what? It's not that hard to curve away. It's not that hard to move to write it so that the lamed will be a little longer or shorter than it should be, than it would normally be, and that way it'll miss the bottom of the line gachof. You see that sometimes in Sifrei Torah, for example. In Sifrei Torah, you typically have like that. The amount of space between one line and the next is usually the equivalent of the X height of one line. So again, if let's say in a particular Sefer Torah, you usually have the letters, the regular letters, the Aleph and the Beis and so forth, let's say are half an inch tall, then you're usually going to have a half inch space of blank, of a half inch of blank space between one line and the next. In that half inch, you might sometimes have a line gachof descending and a lamed ascending. Fine, it's easy enough. Sometimes you'll see in a Sefer Torah where therefore the sofer writes the lamed a little longer than normal. Or a little shorter than, or a little longer horizontally than normal, or a little shorter horizontally than normal, so that the top of it won't bump into the line gachof above it. So therefore, Rabbi Ami is saying the same way. If a person is trying to add something falsely to a shtar, he might do that as well, and therefore that's reason enough. That would be enough space for it to be a problem. Again, if you have two lines like that, and then we have a third opinion. Rabbi Bohu Omar could go in Boruch ben Levi b'shita achas. Rabbi Bohu says that it would already be a problem even if you only have enough room to write, for example, the words Boruch ben Levi on one line, where you have on the same line you have a line gachof going down and a lamed going up, meaning kosava shita achas or shnei avirin. Meaning we're saying, in other words, that according to him, the amount of space between the body of the shtar and the edim that would pass all the shtar would be all you need is one X height, and all you need is one X height plus two spaces, one for a lamed to go above and one for a langachov to go below. And already, even if there's that amount of space, then he might be able to get in two lines b'doichek, and therefore that he might add two lines of text, and then we have something added falsely to the shtar, and we don't want that. So therefore, according to Rabbi Bohu, even if you only have that amount of space, that would be enough to passel the shtar to begin with, unless you fill up that space with signatures of edim, like we learned yesterday. Now there are now again, how many different opinions do we have in the Gemara over here? So according to the Rashbam, really what we have is we have Rav Nachman Yitzchok's statement that you have to have some space between the lines, otherwise it would be impossible to write anything there without it being noticeable. We had Chizkiya's point, which is not arguing with that, which is saying that you go according to the Ksav Yad or Edim and not the Ksav Yad Sofer, because again, you're not realistically going to be able to get the Sofer to go along with your schemes. Then within Chizkiya's opinion, we have three opinions of how much the two lines are, how many spaces we're talking about above or below the X height of the lines. Again, just to re-clarify, in case I didn't make it clear before, the X height being the term that's used, they use nowadays in typography to mean the space that's used by a regular letter that doesn't go above or below the line. And then again, you have Rishonim who learn that at least Rabbi Bohu. So you have we said that the Ritva and Rabbeinu Gershom learned that actually even Rabbi Yitzchok is arguing on Chizkiya and saying you don't go according to the Ksav Yad HaEdim. You do have to consider Ksav Yad Sofer, because what if he did get the Sofer to go along with his schemes? But then you also have Rabbeinu Yonah, who says that in fact here Chizkiya had said that you need two lines b'ksav yidei edim, and here Rabbi Bohu is saying that and Rabbi Bohu is also saying over here that you're talking about even b'ksav yad sofer, even the sofer's handwriting, who's able to write more small smaller and more finely. Yeah. You have to be concerned if there's enough space over there for him to write to him, for him to add something, because again, maybe you would get the sofer to be able to go along with it and not worry about what happens if people find out. Okay. As far as the actual halacha, in general, the poskim paskin like Chizkiya, because most of the Rishonim understand that we're not arguing with Chizkiya, we're just clarifying within his opinion. And then as far as the amount of, as far as the spaces for the lamads and chafs and whatnot, the Rambam brings, and then the poskim seem to follow him as for the second opinion, that as long as you have enough space on the top line to write a lamed, and on the bottom line to write a lange chof, and between them you could have that space could be shared by the top of a lamed and the bottom of a lange chof, because again it's easy enough to move over the top of the lamed to not bump into the bottom of the lange chof, then in that case that would be enough to make the shtar posel, unless that space is filled in with something. Okay. So the Gemara continues. So now that we've dealt with that matter of the space above the signatures of the Edim, now we're going to talk about another thing. You also have, we've learned about before, that a shtar may have a kiyum on it. Eventually, you have the shtar is brought to Beis Din. And Beis Din validates the and Beis Din validates the shtar and says that and says we've certified, we've received eders that these are in fact the genuine signatures of the edim, and therefore then they write on the shtar a nusach of kiyum, which we've talked about before. It's called kiyum. It's also called a henpik. It's called a sharter. It goes by a number of different names, and then the dayanim sign on it. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav lo shanu ela bein edim l'ksav." When we talk about the problem with there being two blank lines, and this whole thing about that you might write something extra in there, is only when you have two lines between the two blank lines or more between the body of the shtar and the signatures of the edim. Because then again, at the bottom of the body of the shtar, you might add extra details or things that's going to change the meaning of the shtar. As we learned about yesterday, yeah, Tosfos's whole point about that maybe nowadays that we write shorter v'kayim at the end of a shtar is a standard thing, then maybe that's less of an issue. But in any case, that you do have that basic concept of two blank lines as a problem. But Rav says, Avol ben edim la asharta. But now we have another point. You have below the signatures of the edim, you might have that asharta, which is again that certification by Beis Din that the signatures are in fact genuine, that they received eders. Where the Rambam summarizes, you have five different ways of being mekayim the signatures in a shtar. You can have the edim themselves come and testify about their signatures. You can have other people come and testify that these are their signatures. Beis Din could have their signatures on file from previous documents, and they compare them. And so there's several different ways. In any case, so, and when they do that, then Beis Din writes a nusach on the shtar called an asharta. The word asharta, by the way, comes from a word in Aramaic that means to make strong. It's actually related to the word, like we have the word yishar koichacha, which we nowadays pronounce as yashar koyach, comes from that word also. It means your strength should be strengthened, should be made stronger. And asharta similarly makes the document stronger and makes it that now we know that's genuine. Anyway, so Rav is saying, if you have space between the signatures of the Edim and the Asharta, I feel a tuvanami, even if there's a lot of space kosher, then the shtar is still going to be kosher. Then the shtar is still going to be kosher. Well, the Gemara asks why. Maishna ben Edim l'ksav, consider, what's the difference? If there's space between the body of the shtar and the signatures of the edim. So we've been saying all this time, the problem is duma mezayif v'kosa mai deboi, because he might forge something, he might write whatever he wants in that extra space, v'chsimi sadi, and then you come out with a shtar over here, which has genuine signatures of edim at the bottom of it, and they're not going to know that he added something extra. Well, Bein Edim La Asharta Nami. Don't you have the same problem? If you have below the signatures of the Edim, between it and the Asharta, then you also might have the same kind of problem. Nami Mizayif Akosa Maideboy, he might also forge and add and alter whatever he wants over there and add more details over there before the signatures of the Dayanim. Vachasimi Sadi. And then you have the Dayanim are signing below, and they're saying that everything that's in this shtar is valid, because that's the nusach that they write. And the asharta is that we've checked over everything above this in the shtar, and we found it valid. So fine, the original signatures of the Edom are going to be above it, and they're not going to be of it. But then you have, in other words, that we're going to say, fine, something was added after the signatures of the Edom, and we're going to talk about at the end of the Perek, at the end of the Masechta, we're going to talk about there can be cases where something like that is added and it has a certain validity. And now you're going to have an Asharta at the bottom of it, certifying that it's all kosher v'yosher, and that's a problem because it's not. So how can you allow that amount of extra space where you could write something extra over there? And the answer is demetayitle. The answer is what you have to do is in that extra space between the signatures of the Edim and the Asharta, then you would have to have he has to be metayit, which means basically that he marks it up and smudges it with ink. The word metayit is related to the word tit. Tit in Lashon Kodesh and in Aramaic means mud. Means mud or clay. So it means like you muddy it and you dirty it with ink. So in other words, so now obviously you're not going to be able to write anything in that space because it's all full of ink. The Oruch, by the way, has a different girsa that's brought on the side over here that the word is not demetayet, meloshen tit, but rather demidayet with a dalet and a tuf instead of the two tesses, and therefore that would be meloshen diusa, which is the Aramaic word for ink. So it means that you would fill it up with ink. Either way, in other words, the point is that you're right. If there's blank space over there, then that would be a problem for the reason that we just said, because you might add something extra over there and then claim that the Asharta certifies that that part is valid as well. So what you do is you make sure if there's any blank space between the signatures of the Edim and the Asharta, then you put then you fill it up with marks and smudges of ink, and then therefore nothing can be written over there. Tosfos actually discusses, you know, you have a couple of possibilities. You can have, for example, that you put dots or lines of ink or whatever, where therefore you can tell. So now you can see between the dots or between the lines, there's blank space, which you can see was never erased. Therefore, that's good, because then that means that there's no possibility that something was written over there and then erased and then rewritten over with this. Because really, if you just smudge it completely with ink, then you never know. If you don't have any blank parchment visible over there, then you might actually have. Maybe there might be a concern. Something was written over there, that would be valid at the bottom of the shtar. Then it was erased, and then it was smudged over with the ink over here. So primarily we're talking about over here that what you should be doing is making lines or dots or something over there and make it clear that way that nothing was ever written over there. And after all, Tosfos points out, otherwise conceivably you might do that. You might smudge up the whole shtar with ink and then erase the whole thing and then rewrite the whole thing and forge signatures of Edim and the Asharta and everything. So it's better to explain it like that. It means that you're doing lines or dots of ink or something like that. Well, the Gemara asks, Ihochi, well, in that case, if you're saying, so now we're saying that you have an alternative, you can fill up that blank space with dots or lines or smudges or whatever like that. Well, then in that case, Bein Edim L'Shtar Nami Matayetle. So what's the problem? If you have extra space between the body of the Shtar and the Edim, do the same thing. Why do we say all this time the Shtar is posel unless you get extra Edim to fill up that extra space? Do the same thing. Do the same kind of tiyuta over there. Add the lines and dots or smudges or whatever, and then nothing can be written over there. The answer is you can't, Amri, because then people are going to think, Sadia Tiyuta Hu Dachsimi, who knows? Maybe the Edim are signing on the Tiyuta itself. Maybe they're signing on the smudges and the marks and things like that. After all, the Rashbam points out, you have, for example, a Gemara in Gittin that mentions a case where let's say you wrote a get, and then at the bottom of it, after the text of the get, you wrote, by the way, say hello to Pliny, and then the Edim sign on it, then you have a problem. Maybe the Edim are only signing on the hello and not on the get. So in other words, the Edim are not always there. Sometimes the Edim are a shtickel ami aretz, and they may not realize that they shouldn't be doing that. So the same way over here, adding smudges or things like that might be then that the Edim are signing on that, and therefore they're not really signing on the body of the shtar itself. Um, so uh, So therefore, that's why if you have blank space over there, it's puzzle, unless you can fill it up with the actual writing of Edim. And fine, as we learned yesterday, the Edim can even be Kroivim or Psulim or whatever, but fine. But other than that, to have blank space is no good, because you might add something over there, and to have Tiyuta, to have marks of ink over there, is also no good, because maybe the Edim are signing, certifying that with their signatures, rather than the body of the Shtar. All right. So the Gemara says, well, then ben edim l'asharta nami ami beidina tiyuta hudachsimi. Nu, don't you have the same problem if you have the smudges above the asharta? Same problem. In other words, then you're going to say that the Beis Din maybe is certifying only that. And the answer is beidina tiyuta l'chassimi. The Beis Din are more bucky in these dinim. They're not going to sign. They're not going to do a kiyum on random marks and then smudges like that on a shtar. So if we see that there's a tiyuta like that, that there's a smudged up area before the signatures of the dayanim, then we know that they're certifying the entire shtar and not just the smudges. Mashenkin, the edim may not know better. So that's why Rav is saying that when it comes to above the asharta, then you have more leeway over there. You can do the tiyuta, you can do this marking it up with ink there instead, and that avoids the problem. So now there are a couple of interesting points that Meforshim make in this connection. So one thing is that the Shach actually has a discussion on this. I mean, would the Edim be so ignorant as to sign on random marks like that? I mean, the Dover Shein Me Mamish, what's even Shayach Edus about that? Then why are they even bothering to sign? And if we say more like we're not just talking about lines and dots like the way Tosfos says, if we're talking about actual smudges as well, and the point is again so that we don't suspect that the owner of the shtar added something over there, because now it's clear that it's full that there's nothing over there, but still what's the point? In other words, what are the Edim signing on? So he gives a whole explanation, actually, that what it means is that when the Gemara said Edim atyuta dachsimi, that when we say the Ed sahadi atyuta hu dachsimi, we said that the Edim might sign on the tyuta. Fine. What we mean is, in other words, there might be that there was that they are in fact including the body of the shtar as well as something else that was on the there might be something in the shtar, there might be fakir, there might be in that area, there might have been something that's to the detriment of the Baal shtar, and they were signing on it, and then he smudged it up and added ink over there in order to wipe out that part, and now he's going to claim that look, it doesn't have that part. So then as far as the Beis Din, the Shach learns that the Gemara is saying that they're not going to sign directly after that smudged up area. They're going to say, they're going to mention the Kiyum. They're going to mention that we can certify this Shtar says such and such, and that this space over here is smudged up instead of having something in it. And then they're signing all of that. So according to the Rashbam that we're talking about, the whole thing is filled up with ink, then we would understand it that way. In other words, that again, the problem is not that the Edim might be so ignorant as to sign on a smudge of ink, but that below the originally where the smudge was, there might have been something that the Shbala Shtar didn't want over there, and therefore we only have to be concerned about that by Edim, who only sign, as opposed to the Beis Din, who actually writes a Kiyum. And then the Shach goes on that if we say, like Tosfos is saying and other Rishonim, that we're not talking about it's completely full of ink, we just mean that there are lines and dots over there. So then the Shach learns according to that, then in fact it would only be a problem if it would attack only be a problem if it was completely blank or if it was completely smudged up, but not, for example, if you have lines or dots over there, then the Shach learns it would be fine, and even it would be fine even above the signatures of the Edim, because there's no possibility that anybody wrote anything over there, because it's pretty clear nothing was written over there, because you can see between the lines and the dots, you can see there's blank spaces that were never written on. So the Gemara continues. Now, what are you telling me so far? So you're telling me that if there's space above the kiyum, above the asharta, then there's not such a problem, because as long as that shtat, as long as that space is filled up with some kind of markings or smudges or whatever, then we're saying that then we're saying the shtar is kosher and we're not concerned. The Beis Din is obviously knows better than to do a kiyum just on a smudged up area, and conversely. According to the Shach, they're going to be saying, we're going to check out thoroughly and find out what was written here formerly, if there was anything written over here. But the Gemara still says, V'lechosh, don't we have another concern now? Dumag Gaya's Leila Ela, shouldn't we have to be concerned that the holder of the shtar might cut off the top part of the shtar, the entire nusach of the shtar, and leave only the smudged up area with the kiyum at the bottom, or mochik le'tiyuta, then he's going to erase the smudges and the lines and dots and whatever that were there in the tiyuta area, the kos of my debari, then he's going to rewrite a whole new shtar over there with whatever he wants, or machtim sadi, and he's going to add forged signatures of edim, and then at the bottom of it, you have a kiyum of Beis Din, and then he's going to bring the shtar to Beis Din and say that it's valid. Look, it's got a kiyum at the bottom of it. So how do we avoid that issue?
How do you cut away the middle lines without cutting the bottom?
Not the middle lines, the whole top of the shtar, we're saying. So you have the whole shtar takes up however many lines beginning from the top of the document. So now what he's going to do is he's going to cut away that whole area. So what do we have? In other words, the scenario we're talking about so far is you have a shtar, which takes up, let's say, 10 lines. Then you have one blank line. Then you have the signatures of the edim. Then below it, you have a large space, which we said you filled up with tiyuta, with lines or dots or smudges or what have you. And below that, you have a kiyum of Beis Din. So far we were saying that's all good, because we know that the Beis Din didn't do their kiyum only on the smudges and the dots. They're including everything in it. Now the concern is, what you're going to do is you're going to cut off the entire body of the shtar, the entire part with the signatures of the edim. Now what you're left with is the area with the tiyuta, the area with the smudges and markings and whatnot, with a kiyum at the bottom. Good, you're going to go sit there and erase that whole part with the smudges. You're going to write whatever you want over there, put the edim signatures over there, and presto, you have what appears to be a perfectly kosher shtar with a kiyum at the bottom of it.
And you could actually erase the ink?
Yeah. And you think of it the whole time we've been talking, we learned previously, for example, we have an area of machak, you have an area of erasure where conceivably you could have written shorah v'kayim, for example, and that's a problem. Yeah, it's possible to erase now the Gemara is going to point out later, we're going to talk about it more tomorrow, I think, Be'ez Hashem, that you can, there is a noticeable difference between a part of the paper or parchment or whatever that was erased and a part that was not. You can notice this part was erased versus this part was not, which is why Tosfos is saying over here in the case of the Tiyuta that it's better to understand it as meaning lines and dots, where then you can clearly see blank parchment between them that was never written on. But nevertheless, if the whole shtar, as the Gemara is going to say over here, as the Gemara is going to say now, if the entire shtar could be written on previously erased paper and it would still be kosher. So in other words, the point is you would notice a difference in the texture, for example, between where it was erased and rewritten versus where it was never written on, versus where it was written on for the first time. But nevertheless, you wouldn't be able to find out what was there before. And maybe nowadays with MRIs and whatnot, maybe you can. Sometimes they're able to do that. Sometimes they find ancient manuscripts that were rewritten over, and they're able to use electron microscopes or what have you to recover the text that was there. But we're talking about with the technology that they had in the times of the Gemara. Of course, you couldn't. If it's erased, it's erased. So the concern again is that what you're going to have is that smudged up or marked up area. He's going to erase that part. Then he's going to cut off the whole shtar and the edim signatures that were above it. He's going to write something new over there, write new signatures of edim over there. And the kiyum is at the bottom, and it's going to look like everything is good. And that would work, after all, because Omar Rav, and that would work for Omar Rav, because after all, Rav himself, because Rav says, shtar habahu ve'edim ala machak, if you have a shtar that comes to us where it's clear that the parchment was previously written on and erased, and the entire text of the shtar and the entire signatures of the edim are all on that erased area. So that's fine. Rav says kosher. Such a shtar would be kosher because the Rashbam points out, as long as we recognize that these are their signatures, And we recognize that there's nothing that was erased more than once. Now, the Gemara is also going to talk about later, it's more noticeable if something was erased twice versus if it was erased once. But here, if you have the entire body of the shtar plus the signatures of the Edim is all on parchment, which we can see, we can tell has been erased, all of it has been erased the same number of times, then it would be fine. So again, then you'd be able to erase the area with the tiyuta, write a whole new shtar over there, and then you have the kiyum is at the bottom, and the kiyum, it doesn't matter that it seems to that it's on fresh parchment, because the fact is the kiyum is a kiyum, it's signed by Beis Din, and therefore you're going to say that, and therefore you're going to have a problem over there that you could write an entire shtar in that space that formerly was smudged up, and now you're writing instead a new shtar. Tosfos points out in that connection, by the way, there is a Gemara in Gittin that says that if you have a shtar that's written on erased paper, it's possible. That's talking about where you have the body of the shtar is on an erased area and the signatures of the Edom are on fresh parchment. Then it's very likely that what happened is you had a previous shtar over there, which the Edom signed, all on fresh parchment, and then you erased the top part of the shtar and rewrote it. You can't be makshir, it's such a shtar, of course. But here we're talking about the signatures of the Edom are also on the formerly erased space, so fine, you reused a paper that was previously used for something else, and you're reusing it for a new shtag. That doesn't make it possible. So now, again, you have the concern that maybe you could do that with this area that was smudged or marked up. And the Gemara continues, Honicha l'Rav Kahana. Now, it would work out fine, according to Rav Kahana, Demasni l'mashmei de Shmuel, who says that statement about that the shtar and the edim that are written on previously erased parchment, that it would be kosher. Rav Kahana says that that's actually Shmuel that said that. Well, then Shapir, then that's fine. Rav is entitled to argue with Shmuel, of course. So therefore, Rav can say there's no problem if there's a large space between the Edim and the Asharta, because all you have to do is fill it up with Tiyuta, however we defined Tiyuta before, and then Rav would say that there's no concern about a shtar being forged in that area, that you erase the kyuta and write a new shtar, because Rav would hold that such a shtar would in fact be possible. Only Shmuel would hold it was kosher. Fine, so Rav and Shmuel are disagreeing with one another. That's not a big deal. Elul Rav Tavyumi. But according to Rav Tavyumi, de Omar, de Masin l'mashmei de Rav, Rav Tavyumi learns that the statement about a shtar being kosher, even if it's written on previously erased parchment, he says that it's Rav who made that statement. So now we have a contradiction within what Rav is saying. If Rav is saying that you can have an entire shtar with the signatures of Edim all written on erased parchment, then you have the problem over here. So now, again, you're going to have the concern. You have a shtar, you have the Edim below it, then you have a large blank space, which is filled up with tiyuta. Then you have the kiyum on the bottom. All the guy has to do now is cut off and throw away the top part of the shtar, and write a whole new, erase the tiyuta, write a whole new shtar and forge signatures of Edim over there. And then there's a kiyum at the bottom of it, and he comes to Beis Din and presents it as a valid shtar. Actually, the Rashbam points out, before we get to the answer, that really the question really could actually come on any shtar that has a henpik at the bottom of it, any shtar that has an asharta at the bottom of it. Don't you have the same concern over there that you could erase the entire shtar and rewrite it, and then you have a henpik below. So the Rashbam learns that really the Gemara could ask the question on anybody, but right now the Gemara is focusing on that Rav seems to be contradicting himself. How can he allow a large space with tiyuta above the kiyum when that opens up this real possibility of forgery? Tosfos, on the other hand, says, no, listen, if you had actual writing over there, if you had actual text, actual letters, and you erase it, it's going to be very hard to erase it to the extent where it's going to be impossible to see any trace of the letters anymore. There's going to be little traces of the letters left. It's going to be noticeable that there was something over there. But when you only have tiyuta, you only have, as Tosfos had said before, that tiyuta means lines and dots. So then there might be a real concern that you might be able to erase it in such a way where it wouldn't be noticeable that there was anything there before. So now the question is, according to Rav, how is this going to work? And the answer is kasavar, because we can say that because Rav would hold kolki hai gavna in a case like this, fine, a star a shtar that has an asharta in it, but the body of the shtar and the edim are on previously erased parchment. Ein mekaymin osim min hasharta shaboy ela min haedim shaboy. As a matter of fact, you're right. We're not going to be able to rely on just the asharta to say that the shtar is valid. We're actually going to need to be able to have somebody recognize and certify the signatures of the edim themselves. So, in other words, in a case like that, in effect, what we're going to do is we're going to ignore the asharta entirely, and we're going to say, look, you're bringing us a shtar where the body of the shtar is, and where the body of the shtar and the signatures of the edim are all on previously erased parchment. Fine, I see you have an asharta at the bottom of it, but we don't know whether that asharta maybe referred to a previous genuine shtar that was written there or not. So go find the original edim themselves, or people who recognize these edim signatures, and go bring them to Beis Din, and they can testify that these signatures are valid. So that avoids the problem. So that way, you're not relying on the asharta. In other words, what we do in that case is basically we ignore the asharta and we just focus on the signatures of the edim and make sure that we can have somebody testify that those are in fact their genuine signatures. And by the way, I mean, we're going to talk about later in the parak, obviously you can have a really expert forger who's able to forge their handwriting. But look, you know, I mean, in Kenan Moldova Seif, we're going to have a story in a few blots on Kuf Samach Zayin, Bez Hashem, where somebody brought a forged document to Rava that bore his signature, and Rava thought it was his actual signature, and he only realized because of a side reason that it wasn't, and got the guy to admit. So, but look, you know, if we're going to be worried about expert forgers like that, then Kenan Moldova Seif, at least we have to try to do whatever we can to prevent these possibilities. Okay. In any case, so all of this was so far. What we had was we had Rav saying that doesn't matter how much space there is above the asharta between the signatures of the edim and the asharta. There's no problem because we said as long as you fill it up with tuta, however we define tuta according to the different rishonim, then you don't have a problem. But now we have another opinion. Rabbi Yochanan says no. When we said that two lines of space between the body of the shtar and the signatures of the edim makes it possible, between the text of the shtar and the signatures of the edim, then fine, we'll allow you to have up to two blank lines, and if there's any less than that, as we learned yesterday, even if there's only a line and a half, then we're going to say it's kosher. But Rabbi Yochanan says, "Aval ben Edim la'asharta." But below the signatures of the Edim, between that and the Asharta, afilu shita achas also. Then, if you have even one blank line, and even if that blank line is filled up with tuta, then still the shtar is going to be kosher. So this is going to be possible. So Rabbi Yochanan holds, in other words, that you have to have the kiyum has to be written directly below the signatures of the edim without even any space altogether. And the reason is because otherwise you might add something over there that doesn't belong over there. And you're going to rely on the asharta, and then you're going to have a problem. So therefore, so even if you have tuta in that area, then you're going to have the problem. Then you're going to have a problem. And the reason is so that's the Gemara explains. Maishna ben edim l'asharta, because after all, Rabbi Yochanan explains. So the Gemara actually asks. Maishna ben Edim la'asharta. Well, then what are you telling me? Between the Edim and the Asharta, you can't have even one blank line because the concern is Duma Gaius le'iloi, because again, he might cut off the entire shtar that was above and leave only the kiyum with one blank line above it, because of who the Edim b'shita achas, and he would write an entire nusach of a shtar and the signatures of Edim all on that one blank line. And you're going to say v'kasavar that Rabbi Yochanan would hold shtar haba hu ve'ed v'shita achas kosher, that if you have a shtar where the text of the shtar and the signatures of the edim are all on one line is kosher. And we're going to say that Rabbi Yochanan would hold that because, look, the Chachamim are not going to say that there's a difference between a big shtar and a small shtar. Suppose you have, I mean, the minimum thing of a shtar could be, let's say, for example, you know, I, Reuven, sold this field to Shimon. Signed Pliny and Pliny. So Rabbi Yochanan is going to say, listen, we're not going to start saying that only a longer shtar is kosher, a smaller, a shorter shtar is possible. So no, we're going to say that Rabbi Yochanan would say that that it would be that even a very short shtar, where you're trying to save as much paper as possible, and you're putting everything, including the signatures of the Edom, on one line, then it would be kosher. Well, so that would explain why Rabbi Yochanan is saying again that if you have anything, any space above the Asharta, between the signatures of the Edim and the Asharta, then you have a problem. Well, Ihachi, well then going back to the two blank lines, Bain Edim Laksav, don't you have the same problem between the body of the Shtar and the Edim? You have the same problem, Nami. You might cut off the entire shtar because of my deboy. You have a line and a half of blank space, over there. So again, you're going to write a one-line shtar and write whatever you want on it. V'chasimi sabi, and then you have edim sign on it. So how do you avoid that problem? Why is Rabbi Yochanan? So in other words, if Rabbi Yochanan is concerned that above the Asharta you can't have any blank space because you might write a whole shtar and signatures of Edom over there, well then by the same token, why is Rabbi Yochanan say why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan have a problem with blank space, with any blank space above the signatures of the Edom, where also you might write a whole new shtar in that space over there? And the answer is kasavar, because Rabbi Yochanan holds shtar haba hu b'shita achas ve'ede b'shita acheres posel. Because Rabbi Yochanan holds, fine, you can have a shtar where the entire text of the shtar and the signatures of the edim is all on one line, but you can't have, says Rabbi Yochanan, to have a shtar where the body of the shtar is written on one line and the edim on the shtar directly below on the line directly below it. That Rabbi Yochanan would say is possible. Why? Because then you have the problem. The line above the Edom is Shita Achrona, it's the last line of the Shtar. It's also the first line of the Shtar, but it is the last line of the Shtar. And we've been saying all along in the Sugya that you can't learn anything from the last line of the Shtar. So therefore, if you have space above the signatures of the Edim, no problem. Even if you were to write a shtar over there, if they bring it to any Beis Din, Rabbi Yochanan is going to say they're going to declare it possible because you can't have a one-line shtar with Edim directly below it. But you could have a one-line shtar with Edim on the same line as it. That wouldn't be called shita achrona, and therefore that's a problem if you have the asharta with any blank space above it. All right. Still, the Gemara says, you could still have a concern over here. Lechush Dilma Kosav Hu B'Shita Achas. Maybe Kosav Hu V'Edav B'Shita Achas. Maybe you could be concerned that what he's going to do is he's going to write a whole new shtar in that blank space above the signatures of the Edim. He's going to write a whole new shtar with signatures of Edim at the end of that line, which Rabbi Yochanan is saying is kosher. And again, the logic is that Rashbam says, because the Chachamim don't really have an ability to say that we're going to passel a short shtar and being machshir only a long shtar. But don't you have a problem, though, that he's going to say, fine, you have a newly written forged shtar on the blank line with two signatures of Edim on it. And then you have those other Edim below it. And he's going to say, Omar, and he's going to say, Anola Rabbis be'edim hudavdi. Fine, I just wanted to add extra edim to the, shtar to make more of a piercing for what's in the shtar. So in other words, what we're going to say is that we're going to say that, we're going to have the signatures of four edim on the shtar. Fine, you're allowed to have four edim on a shtar. Two of them are going to be on the same line as the body of the shtar, and those are going to be forged signatures because those were not part of the original document. Those were something that he cut off and threw away the original document and wrote the body of a shtar and two edim on that. And then they're going to go and say, okay, as far as being mekayim the shtar, we're going to say, well, there's two signatures below it. We can recognize, yes, these are our signatures, and we're going to validate it. And then you have a problem. They're validating a forged shtar. The answer is kasavar, because Rabbi Yochanan holds kolki hai gavna. If you have a situation like that, ein mekayim in osim in edim shalamata, elam in edim shalamayla. In that case, then fine. When it comes to being mekayim the shtar, we're going to have to ignore the edim who are written below the text of the shtar, and we're going to have to see if we can be mekayim it only from the edim that are written on the same line as the shtar. And they're not going to be able to do that because the guy forged it. So that'll avoid the problem. So therefore, it all works out very nicely. According to Rabbi Yochanan, we can say that, yes, a one-line shtar is kosher with Edim on it, but how do we avoid them? How do we avoid him using the blank space above the Edim for that is because if he just tries to use the one strip to write a one-line shtar with Edom on it, then it would be like any other shtar. We're going to bring it to Bastin. We're going to be Mekayim. We're going to try to be Mekayim it, and nobody will be able to recognize the signatures because they're in fact forged. And if the concern is that he's going to leave the Edom that were there before and have two Edom, if you're going to say he's just going to leave the Edom there and have a shtar on the blank line above them, that's going to be possible because a one-line shtar with Edom below it, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is possible. And if you're going to say he's going to add the newly forged shtar with the two Edom on the end of it, and then two more Edom below it, then we're going to say, when it comes to me, Mekayim the Shtar, we're going to ignore the Edom below it, and we're going to focus only on the ones above it. And again, we're not going to be able to validate them because they are forged signatures, and that way we've covered all our bases. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, there's no problem having the blank space above the signatures of the Edom, because there's no way that he's going to be able to use that, as we just described. But on the other hand, when it comes to space above the Asharta, then we have more of an issue over there, because then you could conceivably have a one-line shtar with signatures of Edom and an Asharta below, and then people are going to think that it's kosher because of the Asharta, and that's no good. So the understanding is that so Rabbi Yochanan is evidently arguing with Rav. Tosfos discusses exactly what the nature of their machlokas is, but we have a general rule. So Tosfos actually brings up the possibility that maybe in fact Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are not actually arguing. Maybe Rav is talking about when there's tsiyuta above the asharta, and Rabbi Yochanan is talking about when there's not. Another possibility is, according to Rav, you'd be allowed to have one blank line between the Edom and the Asharta, but not more than that. But Rabbi Yochanan is saying, and Rabbi Yochanan is saying that even that would be a problem. So then it would be a much more minor machlokas. But in any case, the general understanding of the poskim seems to be that Rabbi Yochanan is arguing with Rav, and that being the case, we have a general rule that when Rav and Rabbi Yochanan argue, the halacha is generally like Rabbi Yochanan, and that is indeed how the poskim paskin over here. So therefore. So therefore, in short, even when you have this space over here with tsiyuta and all of that, it would be an issue. Actually, with tsiyuta, we said there's not such an, again, Tosfos brings up one possibility that Rabbi Yochanan is only passing it when there's no tsiyuta. When there is, he might agree that it's fine, because then again, even if you erase it, it'll be noticeable that it was erased, and you're going to check into it and realize that there's something that's a funny business going on over here. Tosfos in this connection brings up, Tosfos has a discussion about this whole business that we're saying about the format of a shtar in terms of a shtar all on one line with the signatures on one line and all of that. Tosfos points out that then you, for example, when you have a ksuba and you often have or any kind of shtar where you often have a wide blank margin around it, then there's a problem over there. If you have the Edom sign next to each other, then conceivably you could cut off a piece of it, write the text of a shtar next to the signatures of the Edom in the margin, and then you have, again, it's a shtar, huva Edom, v'shita achas, and it's going to be kosher. So therefore, what you need to do is the Edom have to sign one below the other, and again, as the Gemara is saying over here, that helps now that avoids the problem of forgery, because a shtar like that, you wouldn't be able to use. The Tashbetz, actually, a Talmud of Maharam Rutenberg, points out an interesting thing in that regard. This can be a source for the concept where eventually they came up with the concept of decorating the sides of ksubas. You often find ksubas where you have a whole decorative border around them. And the reason for that is that helps with what Tosfos is saying over here. Now you have, in general, with a ksuba, you want to have a night. You don't just want to crowd the ksuba onto a piece of paper or parchment. You want to have a nice wide margin around it so it looks nicer. But on the other hand, then you have the concern of Tosfos that you might use that. You might cut off a piece of that margin and write something in it. So instead, what they developed the minhag was to decorate that part, and then you avoid that problem. Now, actually, the Tashbetz says that some people fill it up with psukim and designs like that. So psukim, he says, is not really such a good thing to do, because you have concerns about writing psukim by themselves outside of a Sefer Torah or whatever. But at least the Tashbetz mentions that for the ksubas of my own daughters and my daughters-in-law, I had them write poems and things like that over there. But at any rate, the point is not to leave the margins blank, for the reason that Tosfos is talking about, because then conceivably, based on what we're saying over here in the Gemara, you might end up taking a piece of that margin cutting it out, writing something new in it, and there you have genuine signatures of Adem on it, and we want to avoid that possibility. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beth Hashem, and we'll talk more about this business we mentioned about paper that was erased and then rewritten on, and then in terms of a shtar being kosher on it, and we'll get into more of a discussion about the ins and outs of that tomorrow, Beth Hashem.
When we say taking out a part and cutting it out, it means, I mean, once you cut out a piece from the ksuba, it's gone. You know, I mean, from the get, it's you can't put it together again. Right.
No, of course. But what we mean is you might throw out the other part and write a whole new shtar. Imagine, for example, you want to have yourself a shtar that says that Pliny owes you $10,000. So what are you going to do? You're going to do how are you going to get genuine signatures of Adem on such a thing? So what you might be tempted to do is take a genuine shtar that says something else, say, for example, a get or some other kind of document or whatever, cut off a piece of it, write the words, I Pliny owe Pliny $10,000, and then there are signatures at the bottom of it. And then when it comes to Beis Din, who's going to be, what you're validating is the signatures. You do a qiyum on the signatures, and the signatures are genuine. That's what we're trying to avoid over here.
Okay. Shkoich.
Yeah. Everyone.